Hello, and welcome to the Marketing Times Analytics Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Sophronis, and today I'm on with Lafayette Cunningham. Lafayette, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. But yes, I'm Lafayette Cunningham. I work in influencer marketing. I am on the creative partnerships team at Cycle currently, which is an end-to-end influencer marketing agency. And I've worked in pretty much every vertical, fashion, beauty, finance, tech, gaming, CPG, and just recently a little bit of sports. So it's been great so far.
That's really cool. Yeah. And first question off the bat that I was talking about in an earlier podcast I'm curious to run by you is, do you find that influencer marketing is particularly better at B2C or B2B marketing, and why?
Honestly, I think the intention behind it is just like naturally B2C, because you're essentially trusting an influencer to market something or an experience or product or whatever, because they have the audience for it. And people go to influencers because they're authentic, and you can honestly have an audience that already trusts them. You're already getting to an audience that trusts them. So I would say across the board, although I have worked on a B2B influencer campaign and it was like very interesting and new and difficult, but I think most of the time it is B2C, and that's what we have found to be very effective.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, going back to the beginning, I'm curious, how did you get into the influencer marketing world?
Yeah, so it's a funny story, because I had a completely different life, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I went to undergrad for theater, but I was looking for a change within, I didn't know if it was like a change within my industry or something completely different, but then COVID hit. And I think a lot of people were forced to do something else or go a different direction. I made a full pandemic decision. I went back to school and I got my master's at NYU. In public relations, but I still wasn't really clear about what direction I wanted to go in. But I knew it was something digital. I was like, I feel like this, it's going to be digital comms some way, shape, or form. I ended up getting a job at an ad agency for live entertainment. Most of our clients were Broadway shows. So it was a really cool experience. I was on the social media team. And just before I got there, my graduate thesis was in influencer marketing. And I was like, okay, so I think my future will probably be influencer-ish, influencer adjacent, not fully, but let me see if it's social media so I can do a little bit of everything. And then once I got there, a few months in, I realized that like the influencer stuff was the stuff that I was most passionate about. Like whenever they would bring it up in a meeting or I was being called in, sometimes they would call me into pitches to pitch influencer activations. I was like, this is the me. This is the stuff I wanted to do. So I eventually realized that I wanted to do that full time, but I also wanted to explore different verticals. I was at an ad agency for live entertainment, so I didn't want to be pigeonholed into entertainment the rest of my life. Coming from someone who had a theater background, a theater degree, I wanted to explore different areas. And I'm really glad I did that, because I've always been a very, this is my life plan kind of person, but playing in all of these verticals that I've worked with has been really great. And I feel great that I don't really have to make a decision right now about where my career will be. I can just enjoy every aspect of every single industry of the influencer space. So really glad I'm here, and I'm looking forward to where that goes into my future.
Yeah. And speaking of the future, do you see the influencer marketing tactic growing as an industry in the future?
I definitely think so. I think a lot of companies have started to see the science behind it. They have really seen the power that some of these influencers have. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier, that trust, that they've really built an audience of trust. And a lot of the influencers that I work with and I follow, like, they're giving their daily lives on display to these people that they essentially trust. It's a mutual benefit between an influencer and their audience. And so I think a lot of companies are starting to realize that they want to tap into that conversation. And so I work with a lot of companies now. In fact, I have a new client at our agency. They've never done influencer marketing before, but they're another one who's come to realize the power behind it, the power of dynamic storytelling between someone who is already trusted by so many people.
Yeah, I love that. So when you're selecting an influencer, how important is audience alignment, and what are the different factors that you look at when you're evaluating if somebody's a good fit as an influencer?
Yeah, that's really a great question. It really starts at the top, I'll say, and I've learned that kind of the hard way when trying to pitch influencers for different projects, but it really does start at the top. Whatever it could be, marketing, PR, like advertising, the sales, or whatever team you have within any company, in any project, they all have the same goal. If it's like, we want to meet this audience, so this audience does this act, then my job is to really look at that influencers. If I say I have an idea of someone I want to work with, I'm really looking at their audience. Are they in that demographic? And do they respond well to X, Y, and Z or whatever? But I always want to make sure with all of our clients that they have a good engagement rate. So for all of their content that they're putting out, are people doing something with it? Are they liking it? Are they sharing it? Shares are really important. They don't get talked about enough, but are they sending it to other people? Are they creating a conversation based on that content? And that's how that engagement goes up. And then I also want to see that they're good storytellers. Regardless of what we're trying to sell, they have to make it an authentic story. And for all of the influencers that we onboard to campaigns, we give them a form, which is just like a concept form where they outline, it's not really a script, but some people think of it as a script where they outline what they're going to say, what their caption might be, where they're going to film, just so we can get in an idea. And that helps us better understand what story they're trying to tell. And it also, it lets us regroup internally before we give them the green light to film. So we can make sure they're checking off every single box that we want to tell. And that's why that mutual benefit, there's like a mutual benefit between a creator and an audience. There also is one between a creator and the brand, that whatever they're working with, because we all want to make sure that we're telling the same story. So there is a lot that goes into it. And I think it also depends on the type of company, whether it's semi-larger or depending on what vertical we're in and things like that. We all look at follower counts. Personally, I'm trying to not make that the deciding factor anymore, because I think engagement is arguably more important. A lot of brands, we have to educate some clients where followers aren't everything. The engagement is really everything, because a lot of the times we're putting money behind their content. So it gets shown into different audiences, not just their following. So I really just want to make sure at the end of the day, they're good storytellers, they have the right audience, and they make great content, because at the end of the day, they are representing us as a brand, if that makes sense.
And speaking of that, I'm sure there's also brand risks associated with partnering with somebody as they're creating content outside of when they're mentioning your brand. So how do you assess for that? What are you looking for as warning signals, but also as green lights for somebody who's a safe person to bet on with your brand?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We do a lot of vetting for any of the influencers that we might want to bring on. There's a lot of flags to look for, because you just never know, especially for the really active creators who post 1, 2, 3, even 5 times a day. I am looking at their content for the last generally 6-ish months. I'm looking at, is everything appropriate, especially what we're selling? Like, it could be like a product for families. So we want to make sure, is it age appropriate? I'm also paying attention to the kind of music they the music they list with their videos. I want to make sure that's appropriate. But then I also want to see that they aren't, depending on the client, I want to make sure that they're not over promoting any competitors. Because one, that's not a great look for the brand. But two, it's going to come off inauthentic if they're just saying, I love this brand, I love this brand, I love this brand. Okay, you can't love all of them. So there's got to be a little bit of truth to just one of them, but not all of them. And I also want to make sure beyond their content, we do our own little vetting where even if it's like high level Google search, or we're just like looking at their names and like different types of places, we just want to make sure we are getting rid of any risk on the front end. And we do this all in the beginning before we even reach out to them. Because if we see any type of flag after they've been onboarded, it gets a little bit tricky. And so just to keep everyone happy and keep a good relationship, we do a lot of vetting on the front end. But it's pretty much those few things where it's the content, the searches, and then anything controversial on any sort of platform.
Yeah, thank you. And so this is a lot of advice from the brand side and from the agency side. I'm curious, mm-hmm. if you're speaking to somebody who's building their audience, who wants mm-hmm. to kind of have this kind of a deal set up, and this is actually why I reached out to you originally. I was curious about your recommendations for myself. What mm-hmm. are some of the advice that you would give for somebody who's looking for a brand sponsorship?
Yeah, honestly, I would say, and we did speak about this before, I think living in your niche is super important. Obviously, if there are any creators that you are inspired by and you want to almost emulate their content, I'm sure that's welcomed. And I encourage all creators to explore everything because you never know. But I really love the creators who live in their niche and because they just love doing it. You know that saying where it's, if you love your job, it doesn't feel like work? That is really how I feel about creators. If you love what you're talking about, it's not going to feel like work. And it's not going to feel like overload because you're just really living into, I'm using the example of a lifestyle creator, but you're just really living into your daily vlog where you love going to the gym or you love making a new recipe. You love going out with your friends. That's cool. Share it. I want to see it. If it makes you happy, it's going to make us happy. And that's where we get that sense of authenticity as we're into the casting process. But also, if there's a brand you really want to work with or something along those lines, I don't think it hurts to start mentioning those companies in your content already, because we're going to get a sense of, in our research, okay, it seems like they talked about that before. In fact, this is a good example. I was doing a beauty campaign very early on in my career in influencer marketing, and I specifically found a bunch of creators who had already talked about that brand. And I was like, okay, I already know I'm going to get an authentic piece of content because they talked about it before. And so I love the creators who already have an affinity toward the brand or service or whatever we might be working with.
That makes sense. And I think also a piece of advice you gave to me that I found valuable was just focusing on the quality of the content and growing your engagement and mm-hmm. focusing on the audience, because that's really the primary focus. And then it's similar to a lot of things, even like looking for a job. You don't want to focus on selling yourself too early. You want to make sure you're developing yourself as a valuable prospect, and then people will come to you. And that's actually, that's a really important piece of advice, because otherwise you mm-hmm. might be wasting your time in many cases when you could have reinvested that time into the product, into the content you're creating. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just comes with, like with any career, not just with creators. You learn over time. You learn what works, what doesn't work. I'm a huge fan of trial and error. I've done trial and error with my career. I've had 7 million careers before I ended up on influencer marketing. I think creators do well when they quote unquote fail. And they're like, okay, let me reassess. Let me try something new. And eventually, as you keep going and you have more experience on you, your content is naturally going to get better. You're never going to go backwards. You're always going to go forwards.
So what are the different dynamics when it comes to deals being made between agencies and influencers for different mediums? For instance, a podcast influencer like myself or a podcast mm-hmm. creator like myself versus an Instagram creator versus a YouTube creator. How do those differ in terms of the types of partnerships or the types of deals that they end up having?
Yeah, that is another great question. It really depends. And I think a lot of the biggest thing that could change a whole campaign is, what is the budget? What is the brand giving us to work with us and work with these creators? But it also depends on what I was saying before, is what is the brand looking for? That could be a year-long partnership with a podcast host where every single week they're giving the same information for a brand, but there's, because that's just written in their contract, or it could be a one-off thing. And so I really don't think that it's specific to a platform. I really just think it's more of what the brand wants. I know we talked about this earlier, but I am a huge fan of ambassadorships where it's not just so one-off. If we're seeing like a few deliverables from one creator, I'm actually going to think they have turned over several different types of content, regardless of where they do it. If it's a podcast, if it's on social media, they've turned over several different types of content and they've been able to differentiate the content that goes out there. I actually think they really like this product. And so that's making me think about it a little bit differently. It's not a one-off, click the link in my bio. It's like, I had this experience and then I had this experience. You're really telling me a story. That's so much more interesting than something that's just one-off. And so I know I told you this earlier, but I really hope that's something that brands take more advantage of, because you're essentially bringing on that person into your family, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. So from the creator side, when they're pitching their audience, their engagement, what are the sort of metrics, or just what is the general information that you're looking for when you're evaluating somebody to be a partner with?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, so brands usually, even though I said I hope that they don't put so much emphasis on follower count, they do generally have a baseline follower count of what they're going for. But I have worked for some brands where I have said, look, this person is under what you're looking for, but I think they make great content. So the number one thing is, do they make great content? Regardless of if it's video content, audio content, is the content premium enough for me to put forward to a brand? The second thing I'm looking for is the engagement rate. Are they, for all the content they're putting out, are people actually doing something with it? Are they liking? Are they commenting? Are they sharing it? Are they basically expanding the conversation? And then I'm also looking for, I'm starting that vetting process on the beginning end. If there's anything that we need to flag to the brand that might not be the most appropriate, or they've had some past with X, Y, and Z, whatever, those types of things. And then I also want to make sure that they have the right audience, as we mentioned, but that the vertical that we're trying to sell. So for example, I'm not going to necessarily, just this is an example, but I'm not necessarily going to use a beauty influencer who talks about Sephora a lot and put her forward in a super heavy finance campaign. That just wouldn't make sense. And I think that what we have to do on our end, and this is why I think it's beneficial to me and beneficial to my colleagues, and why I like working at an agency, is because I get to see so many different types of creators who are in different verticals. So it's not like I have to use the same people over and over. The creator world is so big right now. There are so many creators, and it's so cool being able to learn new people every day. But again, it doesn't matter how cool they are, how cool their content is. I have people that I'm screenshotting while I'm scrolling my TikTok, while I'm like flossing my teeth at night, which is like crazy, but they're not going to fit into every single thing. At the end of the day, if I like them at 10 p.m. at night, I need to make sure the rest of their content is good. They have a good engagement rate. They have the right audience that we're trying to go for, and that there aren't any flags with any of their content or any of their history.
And would you recommend creating a mock commercial or content? I know you mentioned actually integrating the potential sponsor in your content ahead of time, but what about just creating like a mock commercial or something like that? Would you recommend that?
I would say if you're posting it publicly, it might be a bit inauthentic, and I have seen, I will say, I do love when creators, this isn't necessarily a mock commercial, but I really love when they talk so passionately about a product and they say, this isn't sponsored, I just love this product. That's so cool. And that's honestly going to give me a sense of what kind of content I'm going to expect from you if I were to partner with you with that brand or a like-minded brand. We see creators over the years, and even like years ago on Instagram, people were tagging every single thing they were wearing or every single thing they were doing or the products they were using or whatever. And I just think that's so cool. I think it's cool that you actually love a product and you don't really have an ulterior motive. You're just saying, this is so cool. I'm like, I need to tell people about it, which again, isn't necessarily a mock commercial. And I think mock commercials, again, might be just a little bit inauthentic, but if you're just really passionate about it and you make it clear that this isn't sponsored, then I think that's so cool. And I encourage people to continue to do that.
Yeah, thank you. And so talking about the engagement metrics that you're looking at, can you give a little bit more detail? Are you looking at like the number of comments? Are you looking at shares? Is there a particular ratio almost that you're looking at between followers and engagement? How do you actually look at those numbers and come up with an insight based off of it?
Yeah, great question. So it's kind of the resources that we have to work for us. So if we're looking at an influencer, the system will just calculate their engagement rate. And that's just based on all of the content that they put out there. You can manually calculate it. I believe it's impressions over engagements, like the number of comments, shares, likes, all put together, and you can get a rate out of that. But it's put all together for us on the front end. In terms of number, industry people will tell you, we like to look at an X percent engagement rate or above on TikTok or Instagram or whatever. I don't follow that to a T. I generally like it to be good, but like, I really believe it. If I really feel confident about the creator, about their content, and how I think it might be perfect brand alignment, I'm not really pushing and making sure that they hit that industry benchmark and they're going above, because we could be missing out on some really great content. And it's like when I told you earlier, the majority of the content that I worked with gets paid behind it. So it's going to reach other audiences regardless. And of course, putting money behind things, naturally the engagement isn't going to go down, but still you're getting it in front of more eyes. And so I don't think the engagement rate is a be all end all for a good partnership. At the end of the day, what is the audience seeing? They're seeing the content. They're not seeing the numbers. They're seeing the video or the audio that you're putting out. And that's what we're trying to reach.
Yeah, and that brought up a couple questions for me. First, you mentioned boosting. So how does that work? The creator creates content that features a brand, and then would you boost that post if that's available, or would they create a new ad that mocks or is similar to an organic post? How does that piece work?
Yeah. So it can happen in a couple of ways. The most common way that I've worked with is, yes, they're boosting that one piece of content. So it lives on its own for X amount of time. And then, for example, on TikTok, they can produce a spark code, is what it's called. And we can give that code to the brand, and the brand will then spark it out or boost it to different audiences, just that one piece of content. So that's probably the easiest, and they do that, that can be done on Instagram as well. That's probably the easiest way to do it, because you don't have to make a separate piece of content, or you don't need their actual raw file. This is actually living on the influencer's page, and it's just being seen in front of more people. So there's no more work on the influencer. They already put out the post on their own. And I also think that's probably the more authentic way to boost it out. If you're getting, let's say, a user-generated content ad, or if they have the raw file, like if the brand takes the raw file and puts money behind it on their own, it's going to say it's coming from the brand, but it's from the perspective of an influencer, which is effective, but personally, it's okay. This is clearly an ad because it clearly is coming from the brand. You can see their name because they have the raw file. But if it's coming from their own account and there just happens to be money behind it, sometimes I don't even notice that it's an ad. I really don't, until the end where they say, oh yeah, this is also sponsored by XXX. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I thought I was just like looking at my favorite creator, and they're just like having a normal day in their life. And I honestly think the sparking, once the content is already live, that's the most effective way. And I say that from, just like I said, the perspective of an audience member, but also from someone on the inside.
Yeah, that's great. And that's an interesting point you brought up, that if you want to get into a career such as yourself, you probably do have to have a really good understanding of social media and how people resonate as a consumer of the media and what works, to understand what to look for somebody who could be effective at it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I always think, and this is, and going to this and like also answering one of your previous questions, I think aspiring creators should just consume it all. Watch everything. I think if you're a creator, scrolling on TikTok, that counts as work. It does. You need to see what's out there so you can get a sense of what you want to do on your own. And especially, and also if you are an aspiring podcast host, listen to everything. Consume everything. Consume all the media. And that just is not for creators. That goes in every industry. Reading books. I worked in theater, so I saw a lot of shows, and it was part of work. Everything is work. And I think education is infinite, especially in the creator space.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel guilty when I'm watching content, but it's true. There's a lot of value to be taken out of it, especially if you're in that mindset that I'm looking at what's working in this content and why do I like it.
Exactly, exactly.
Back to when you're boosting content, when creators are pushing out their content, how are you looking at attribution, or how are you measuring success of that spend with the influencer? So there's the part where you're first sizing the influencer, making sure that the audience works, but also when you're actually engaging, when you're engaging in the partnership, how does that attribution process work? Do they have their own custom link that they're driving traffic to, or are you just looking at the engagement metrics around the post that mentions the brand? How do you go about that?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And I honestly think people don't talk about reporting enough. But as far as a call to action, that really depends on what the brand wants to do. So, for example, I worked with a clothing brand for a really long time. And only once they wanted to drive people to a certain website. But they found that it wasn't effective. People just wanted to look at the content, so they stopped doing it. So that really depends on what the brand wants. But for everything, we do look at metrics on the back end. So about a week and a half to maybe up to 2 weeks, we start to look at the success of the campaign. Who did we reach the ideal engagement rate as a whole, and what did it look like per creator? So how many comments did they get? What were the shares like? What were the likes like? Things like that. What was the engagement? Impressions are great, but like, how did people interact to the content? How did they respond? And we honestly look at, speaking of comments, we look at all of them after the content goes live. So what are people talking about? Are they mentioning their brand loyalty? Are they saying, wow, that thing looks really good on this creator, or I cannot wait to, like, I've never heard of this brand, I want to try this for myself. Basically, what does the conversation look like? And then after we see all of the metrics, we can make an idea of, so what are we going to do for the future? What is our future recommendation? And I'll give you a great example. I just worked with a tech company and they pretty much boosted the content immediately. They didn't let it live. I generally like when content lives on its own before it gets boosted, but they boosted the content immediately. And we knew we were planning on doing that, but on the back end, we realized the engagement was so low because we were putting this piece of content in front of all of these new audiences before it really lived within the creator's audience. So naturally, as I mentioned, the engagement's gonna decrease once you boost it, but once you're doing it right away, you really can't get a sense of, okay, how did it actually perform with this person's audience? Because we're getting the performance from everyone. So I generally like to see maybe a week before content goes out, before we put money behind it so it gets put in certain, like a million different directions. But the recommendation we gave them was, okay, so next time, let's see how it just lives on its own. Let's see how this person's trusted audience reacts to it. Because even though no one really says it, you have to have an idea in your mind about how people are going to respond, especially if it's someone who's so loved. Like, you have a sense of what their audience is going to say. So that's how I look at metrics. I think they're very important. I think reporting is very important. But at the end of the day, the subject is the content, and the subject is the brand within the content.
Yeah, I'm curious, do you have any particular success stories, anything that has been almost like a case study or something that you've experienced where a brand has reached significant success with an influencer partnership that you can share?
Yes, actually. And I think this was one of my favorite campaigns I worked on, but that clothing brand that I worked with for a while, they like a specific type of creator generally. And I caught on like very quickly, and they want all the content to be the same, whether it's a try on haul or get ready with me. All the content was essentially the same. But we ended up partnering with a fashionable comedian. It's this guy who likes to make skits, but he also happens to be a very well-dressed man. And so we decided to partner with him. And he made the funniest video about just being like a vintage, good-looking dad who wears nice clothes, and it was the most entertaining thing I have ever seen in an ad ever. And I was like, wow, I cannot believe this person was so innovative to take something that is so routine and make it completely different. And I vividly remember some of my team members saying, I don't think the brand's gonna like this because it's too different. And I'm like, life is a case study. Like, we have to just try it. And it was so funny. And unsurprisingly, that was the top performer of the whole campaign. Like, the numbers were through the roof and unlike anything I've ever seen. I was like, this is what we need. I think it's important to, as I said, live in your niche. I look at those verticals to make sure we're reaching that audience that might be buying that product. But I think it's so fun to step outside the box a little bit. Because at the end of the day, what is TikTok? What is Instagram? What are podcasts? They're entertainment. They're all entertainment. We need to entertain our audience. That is like one of the most important things. And so that was honestly, that made me believe in the power of breaking the rules. Not everyone has to be a rule follower. Break the rules a little bit. Partner with someone who might not traditionally be right for something. But if the content's going to be good, like that person who was a top performer, just do it. Like, and just measure the results on the back end to see if it was worth the investment.
And that leads me to ask a question, because I'm noticing that there's almost a trend from these big budget advertisements to these smaller budget influencer campaigns. When should a business go with a bigger budget commercial, a TV ad or something that costs quite a bit, rather than an influencer and vice versa? How would you advise a business to use an influencer campaign in the most effective way?
It is, especially for brands who haven't done it before, it's a risk. It is a risk. You just don't know because you've never done it before. And I get that. I think it's always good to start small, just so you can get a sense of, you can get a sense of the industry in a sense, and you can get a sense of like how performance is going to go. It's not a bad thing to start small. Or if you tap an agency who has the resources and who can guarantee that we can find that macro level talent that you might want to work with and reach X amount of audiences, go for it. If you have the budget to really dive in deep for it, and you can tap the right agency who has the resources to help you, I really say, really just go for it. And again, this is why reporting is so important. See how it performs and then make a decision. So sometimes we say this at the end of this campaign, it didn't really perform well. So maybe next quarter, you do a smaller campaign and put more of your budget into traditional advertising, and then see how that goes. And if that doesn't work out, we can do the same thing over and over again. So like I said, I think reporting is important. I think learnings and recommendations are also equally as important. So we just have a sense to do, sense of what we need to do within the next project. But for brands who, again, it's a risk, I get it. You can start small, you can go big. If you have, at the end of the day, that's why it says it starts from the top. You need to know what you're doing. You need to know what the strategy is. And it's honestly a lot simpler than people think. It's usually just one sentence. We want to do X, Y, and Z because of X, Y, and Z. And if you think influencers fall into that scope, that's great. I have worked with some people who have been tapped to do an influencer activation. And they say, okay, based on what you want to achieve, this is probably not the best option for you. So why don't you figure out what you actually want to do, and then we'll see how we can help you.
Speaking of influencers, who are your favorite influencers and why?
Ooh, really good question. So I would say my favorite influencer, it's really this duo, this couple in LA. Their name is Yummer Time. And they have been creating for a really long time, but I see they make really good content, and I might be biased because I've been like following them for a really long time, but they create like this picturesque content of the life that I want to live. They're making these gorgeous pancakes. I've never cared about pancakes so much before I looked at them. They're going on these amazing trips. The way they pack their bags is so intricate, and everything is just gorgeous and beautiful, and it's very appealing. It's literally living the life that I want to live. But then I like other people like, oh gosh, who doesn't love corporate Natalie? Someone who jokes about the corporate lifestyle, especially someone who started just making jokes about working from home in COVID, who has evolved into office culture. It's just so funny and it's really entertaining. But then I have a handful of like lifestyle creators who I like. There's a micro creator from Chicago who I've been following for a while. And I originally started following her. She only has 60,000 followers. So she's not like a mega creator, but her content is so good. And I started following her because she is from Chicago and I was from Chicago. So I was like, oh, okay, I want to see how you are living in my city. And I think that's really cool. And your content's really good. And now I see that she's moving to New York. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So she's a really great storyteller. And I feel like I'm like watching her journey about graduating college and moving from city to city. And that's so cool. I get consumed by, and this is a new thing that TikTok is doing. Not really a new thing, but a lot of people are doing on TikTok, moving away from short form and going to like more long form content where they're sitting down and telling you these stories and they say, all right, like for part two, like part two is coming up, and they just have a full video. Like, we just saw Risa Tisa, who did all of these videos, like, Who the F Did I Marry, who was a really great, that was like a case study for long form content. So I generally like a mix of different verticals, different creators, because they all, just like with anyone who follows any type of creator, they all have different uses for that person who's like watching that content. Like, mm-hmm. I like watching the Yummer Time because they have a great life and it's the life I want to live and they make great pancakes. But I like watching this other creator, her name was Lucia, because she's a great storyteller and she lived in my city. So I follow them for different reasons, but they're all entertaining.
Yeah.
And I try not to be biased because this is my career and I've definitely been in situations where I have tried to push out the creators that I like just because I like them, but they might not necessarily be right for something, but I still enjoy. I try, and that's a learning experience for me. I can't have my cake and eat it too. I can only put them right up for something if they're actually right for it.
Yeah. That's great. I love that how you talk a lot about authenticity. I love how you really love this space, and I can tell that you're really passionate about it. So that's really great to see.
Yeah.
So I just want to zoom out because I know that this is an exciting area for me to think about, for you to talk about. And how does somebody break into this world? It must be competitive. What should you study in school? You took a kind of non-linear path to get in. So what do you recommend for somebody trying to get in?
And that is like such a great question. And the number one question I got from all of my interviews, like in any influencer marketing ever, is who's your favorite creator and why? Like you just asked me. And I said, education is infinite. Just like aspiring creators, aspiring people who want to jump into this business, look at everything. Enjoy the content you're looking at. Like, you want to join that space for a reason. So look at everything, get passionate about the creators that you're following and try to understand, why is their content so successful? Is it because I just like it, or do they do something that might be very appealing? So I definitely look at everything. I would say there aren't, as far as from what I've seen, there aren't a lot of influencer-esque programs in universities yet. I think they're on their way for sure because people are seeing how effective it is. But I think that's honestly great right now because this really is a space for everyone. And people don't realize influencer marketing is... You could be someone like me who works for an agency and all of our clients are brands, or you could be someone who represents talent and you're just pitching them out to different brands or agencies or things like that. Or you could be in-house and you're leveraging an agency to help you with your campaign, or you have built your own influencer program within that company or something like that. So I really don't think, and I've learned this from my own experience and from the people around me, there's no one way to get into it. I don't think it's broken down into a major you should study. I think it's a little bit of everything based on what you want to do. And you may not know what you want to do yet, and that's great. I just think this business has moved so much in the last, even 2 years, but I would say the past 5 years, this industry has just blossomed into something that is like so big. And I'm sure 5 years ago, people could not have predicted how big this was going to be. So the people who like might want to do this in the future, you just have no idea what the future is going to look like. So just read everything, listen to everything. And yeah, there's so many paths for someone. I almost like wish I understood what talent managers go through, because I've never understood that side of the business like as much as I do in my own role. But I just think there's so many opportunities for it. And I'm really happy about that because I definitely think it's just going to get bigger. Like, we're not going to go backwards. There's really a space for everyone. There's really a space for everyone to learn. But it starts with, you just have to have a basic understanding of the space. So be passionate about the content you like and the people you follow.
I love that. And I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you, Lafayette, for coming on and sharing all of this information. I think it's very unique and really valuable. So thanks again.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. And you were right. I am very passionate about this space. So it talks someone's ear off about the creator industry all day.
I love it. Awesome. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll talk to you soon.